I'm Mark Feinsand, executive reporter for MLB.com. I recently had a chance to sit down with Giants Senior Vice President and General Manager Bobby Evans in his office in Scottsdale Stadium in Scottsdale, Arizona. We discussed what he's learned from Brian Sabian, what it was like watching Barry Bonds on a daily basis, and why Buster Posey is so important to the Giants. Enjoy. So Bobby, how did you land your first job in baseball?
You know, I was getting ready for the second semester of I think my sophomore year of college, and I just knew I wanted to do some type of internship, so I actually reached out via letter and then eventually a phone call to the Red Sox in Boston. I did actually at the same time a letter and a phone call to the Celtics. The Red Sox returned the call and ended up going through some process of interviews and discussion, and ultimately ended up with a three-month internship working for Eddie Casco and Ed Kenny and under Lou Gorman's administration with the Red Sox. And it was an eye-opener for me because, you know, I really always wanted to play the game, so it was an eye-opener for me to actually be in the front office, you know, with my childhood team and you know, my favorite, you know, ballpark growing up, and in a great city where I had not grown up far from as a child. And of course we moved later in life to North Carolina, but I, you know, always held, you know, hope of a Red Sox career. So it was pretty cool to get an opportunity to be there.
And then you went on to work in the commissioner's office for a while, correct?
Yeah, so 2 years later I graduated and ended up in the commissioner's office. Very fortunate there for 2.5 years. And it was a great exposure to, you know, what's happening in all of baseball, you know, from the commissioner's office side, but also you get exposure to all 30 clubs, and gives you a different perspective, you know, not only from player development side, but the scouting side and the major league side. So you get a lot of exposure to different, you know, parts of every major league club. So it's a really unique experience over there.
How did that experience help you once you moved to the club side?
Well, when I got there, you know, there was occasionally opportunities where you could interview for different club opportunities, and I think that in many ways Bill Murray, who was with George Fister, who were in Jimmy Lee Solomon and Roy Krasick, all those guys were very influential in my time there. They encouraged me at some point to get in back to a major league club. They, you know, and I had a little bit of experience as an intern, and so as interviews came along, I actually was preparing for an interview with one club at the winter meetings, and meanwhile I opened up the USA Today and saw the assistant director of player development for the Giants had resigned. So I thought, you know, that'd be interesting. So I ended up, you know, interviewing with Tony Siegel and Brian Sabian at the winter meetings that year, and a few weeks later they called and offered me the position, and 2 weeks later I had sublet my apartment in New York and had moved across the country.
So you've been with the Giants since 1994, I believe, right?
So this is my 24th season.
Is there a sense of pride of having been with the same organization for that length of time? It's very rare these days to see players stay in uniform for that long, but it's certainly, you know, that many years, certainly very rare, just as rare to see executives stay in one place as long.
I think I just feel more pride just that it's been with this organization and really in this great city and with these great people. I mean, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of satisfaction, and there's a lot of great executives who do move around and have good reasons for that, just because of opportunities. But I think that from day one, this is a very special place, and I feel very thankful to be here.
Seems like there are a lot of teams that are moving towards the type of structure that you guys have: multi-executive, multi-decision-making front office. Rays, the Cubs, Dodgers, and Twins have all sort of followed that type of mold. Why do you think that shift is taking place with more and more teams?
Well, we don't work in a multi-level executive approach here. I mean, we're working on the basis of the traditional general manager, and I think that's, you know, that's really how we've been run for, you know, all of the last 24 plus years. And but I think that again, there's a you know, continuity, a value in continuity, and I understand, you know, that, you know, that doesn't come easy. I mean, that takes commitment first of all on the ownership's part, and ultimately, as you you know, work, you know, with every level of executive in the organization, but with ownership's commitment, it makes it a lot easier for, you know, all of us, whether it be baseball ops or other parts of organization, to know, you know, where we stand and how to best contribute.
What have you learned most working with Brian all these years?
Brian, just a great mentor to me. He was never one to stunt growth. I mean, he always wanted to give opportunity to expand your horizons, and that happened really early in my time here, and the amount of work I was able to contribute. And Brian comes from a very strong scouting background, and is a talent evaluation is very important, and very passionate about it, and really just his mindset from day one is always to win now, and I think that's a great effect, not only for those of us that have worked for him over the years, but also I think it's very transparent to the fans and to the coaching staff and the players who have been down in those clubhouses over these last 20 plus years.
You joined the team, I believe, a year after Barry Bonds got here. What was it like watching Barry Bonds play baseball every day?
It was electric. I mean, just the moments in which those home runs came, the threat of his power and his contributions, and very early on he was is extremely efficient and effective as an outfielder too, and it was just a five-tool player that you're watching every day, and I think in many ways when we got to the World Series in 2002, we knew that that's really where we should be for many years, and in fact should have had opportunity many years before that just because of his effectiveness, but very, very exciting player for a long time.
Barry returned to the organization as a special advisor to Larry Bear, reuniting him with the Giants on a full-time basis about a decade after he finished playing. Has his role been ironed out? How do you expect that he's going to contribute?
Well, his role will be involving the community, and it'll be involving the business side, and then the opportunity to be in big league camp with our major league players for at least a week every spring, and then some time in the minor leagues where he'll be able to speak to those guys and work with those guys. So there'll be some baseball part, and there'll be business part, and some community part, and it really takes a lot of fun attributes of Barry and puts him in place in the organization. And our fans are very passionate about Barry, and it's just exciting to see him back.
The Giants hadn't won a World Series since they moved to San Francisco till 2010. How rewarding was that year for you and everybody in your front office?
For sure. I mean, I think that I remember talking with my son about prayer. He's 4 years old, and I'm trying to explain to him what prayer is, and in that conversation I'm almost flustered because I don't really know how to explain, but prayer is where you pray, and sometimes God uses the answer to that prayer as a way to reveal himself to you, that he's real. And I was a little bit exasperated, so I just said, pray for whatever you want to pray for, and maybe God will use that to reveal who he is and that he's real. And so he said, well, I'm going to pray that the Giants win the World Series. And my first thought was, my son will never be a Christian, because the Giants hadn't won in over 50 years. And I thought, I was trying to think if there was some way, other way he could pray. And that was what he prayed for. And a couple years later, when we won the World Series, I reminded him of that prayer. And I think that's a lot of how we all felt. Was it just seemed so unattainable, even though we had gotten close. We had great teams in 97 and even 98 and 2000, 2002 and 2003, and yet here we are still pursuing that that seemed to be elusive goal, and when that final out came, I mean, it was electric, and it was really just a whole perspective changing on all of us.
You followed with titles in 2012, 2014. After the first one, did you feel that you had the core in place, that this was something you should be doing again and again?
Yeah, I think from the beginning, the roster changed a lot from 2010 to 2012. I mean, and a little less so maybe 2012 to 2014, but there continues to be some common themes, and those common themes are Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner, and of course Matt Cain, and Lincecum had been a part of all those, and then we had a very core part of our bullpen that was with us for all three of those, but then the additions of Brandon Crawford for the last two, and Brandon Belt for the last two, and now Joe Panik and other guys. I mean, yeah, it makes you feel like there's a core there that you can build on. You still have to continue to to add to the club, because you can't rely on just the same 25 guys. I mean, there's a lot of turnover and there's a lot of changes, and guys move on and guys get older, But with the core that we've had, you definitely feel a sense that this is a special time in Giants baseball.
every team in the majors at this point has an analytics department. They've all caught up to some extent. For a while, it was your scouting team, your analytics team. Do you think it was good that the divisiveness between the two sides seems to have gone away and that everybody is embracing it to some extent or another?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that the game has, has evolved to the point that, to not utilize the information, clubs are, doing a disservice to themselves. And but I think that, one of the benefits, I think early on, back in late 90s, early 2000s, it was part of the information that we used. I mean, we never overemphasized it, but we also allowed it to have a voice. And so it's always been a part of the conversation, a part of the decision-making process. And obviously, as more information and more analysts and numbers have evolved, not only internally but publicly, that's just even more information we're able to use. But it's always been blended here, and we've tried to balance how we weight it. But ultimately, in this day and age, if clubs aren't using it, they probably are using it and just aren't admitting it.
You mentioned publicly. Do you think StatCast is changing the way that fans are looking at the game now?
I think for sure. I think that StatCast, and I think again, those who are really studying the game, there's just a lot of information out there that was never out there before. I mean, I remember as a kid looking at a box score, and you get the hits, runs, and batting average, and at bats for the day, and that's sometimes all you got in the box score. Now you get a lot more information, especially with MLB.com. You can click on it, and you can pull up a whole plethora of information.
Appreciate the plug.
Yeah. Very good. So, I mean, it's great for kids, but it's great for all of us in the game, too.
Do you think teams are out there now looking for the next big thing, the next big wave that's going to help give them a competitive advantage?
No, I think for sure. I think that's happening every day, and I think it's happening all around baseball. And there are some really great, possibilities out there even now that I'm sure that some of which we know and some of which we don't know about, but I think it makes the game all that much more exciting.
One of the more endearing things we all saw this winter was the young fan who wrote you a letter begging you to sign Mark Melancon. I'm guessing it wasn't a huge factor in the decision to sign him. How often do you get letters like that from young fans?
I mean, you don't always know how old the fan is or how,
maybe just bad handwriting.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know. I mean, you get some are typed, and, there's all kinds of different kinds of letters, but not a ton of letters, but enough, particularly from this young man. His name's Mark. I mean, he'll send me a letter. Sometimes I'll get three or four in a month, and then I won't hear from him for a couple of months, and then suddenly you get five or six over a course of a short period of time. And that was funny because I got the Mark Melancon letter, and our off season was about to start or was just starting, and knew that he would be a focal point for us. So I pinned that letter and the picture. He actually sent me an 8x10 picture of Mark.
Just in case you didn't know who he
exactly,
was, right?
Exactly. And so I carefully covered the hat he was wearing in the picture, but I put him up on the bulletin board and reminded our staff that, hey, he's our target. And so when Mark signed, I hadn't taken it down. So Mark came in the conference room where we had been meeting, and he saw it. And it was fun to show it to him because I hadn't really thought about it. But there it was as he was about to go into the press conference.
What did you like most about Mark?
Well, just the ability for him to, to pitch to contact, to also get the strikeout when he needs it. He's very efficient, so it feels like you could use him in back-to-back days more easily, and maybe even back-to-back days. And we play a lot of close games, so we never know how much we'll need our closer. So it's good to have him available. And if he doesn't build up too large of a pitch count, which historically he hasn't, he's very efficient. It's good for our defense behind him, but it's also good for us in that he'll be able to be back the next day. And again, he's a pitcher. I mean, he pitches to location and in some cases to contact. And again, his success rate's been very high.
You mentioned Buster Posey as being one of the common threads between the three championship teams. That caused a lot of comparisons between him and Derek Jeter. Young, a lot of championships early, face of the franchise. How important is he to this organization on and off the field?
Well, I mean, the character of the person, is really above reproach. And I think in every way, the respect that he gets in the game and is consistent with how people see him out of the game, outside the game. I mean, he and his wife have, passion for, kids with pediatric cancer and making sure that research is done to to help those kids. And he's recently, you know, working with the Jimmy V Foundation and has made a big emphasis in this last year in that area. But that's just one example of the person that he is. But this clubhouse depends on him, you know, on and off the field, in the clubhouse, and you know, his style of leadership, his presence. He sets the tone in that clubhouse one way or another, and has, you know, almost ever since he got here. And you know, he's really the quarterback on the field, you know, in calling the games. He makes every pitcher out there better, whether it be a starter or a reliever, and then obviously hits in the middle of the order.
What does Jimmy Rollins bring to your team?
Yeah, we're still trying to figure that out in terms of how he could contribute to us in 2017. The nice thing for us, with the veteran presence and the ability, you know, as we're seeing to play other positions, a switch hitter, you know, a guy that everybody in that clubhouse respects from day one. But as we get down to a 25-man roster, it's going to be a tight fit. I mean, it's going to be very, very hard for him, especially as he's struggled offensively with other guys that have done well. I mean, we're relatively near the end of camp here with some guys that have actually excelled. Offensively, they just don't necessarily have the same presence. So we'll have to measure that and be and weigh it all of it before we make a final decision.
How difficult is it when you have a guy like Matt Cain, who's meant so much to this team, set to earn $20 million this year, and the performance isn't necessarily matching the expectations?
It's hard just because I know how much he wants it. I mean, I think that, you know, we know him so well, and we've seen all of the, you know, the work that he puts in and really all the leadership he's brought over the years. You know, he stuck with us when our offense wasn't helping him get through, you know, probably very deserved wins. And in many ways, you know, these last few years we've stuck with him despite the injuries and despite the downturn in performance. This is a pivotal time for him. I mean, as we are evaluating, you know, where he'll fit in this rotation or if he'll fit in this rotation. And so it's hard on us because there's a lot of emotional tug, you know, for us, but we ultimately have to do what's best for this team. And Matt understands that, and Matt doesn't want to be here if he can't compete. But the thing is, he hasn't lost that competitive edge. He's just having to make adjustments, you know, with his approach that, you know, are harder to make, you know, later in your career.
Speaking of Madison, including club options, you've got Madison Bumgarner under control through 2019. You said you hope he remains with the Giants, quote, for the long haul. Is there any hope to getting him signed to an extension to lock him up into the next decade?
I mean, I think there's mutual interest there at the right time. I think that's really the key point is really what's the right time and when can we best begin those kind of conversations. And, you know, it's hard because part of the benefit of the contract is length, and when there's 3 years already existing on the contract, it's, you know, it's harder to add the length when there's already 3 years. So I think we're really having to, you know, sort through that and ultimately come up with the right time to address it. But, you know, every one of these championships has clearly been, Madison Bumgarner has been a big part of it.
You signed Buster Posey, Brandon Belt, Brandon Crawford, the deals that keep them in San Francisco into the next decade. How important was it to get those guys locked up?
Well, again, as you look at the core, you know, they're a big part of the core of our defense and offense, and arguably each one in their own right, you know, gold glove caliber defender. But each one plays an important role in our lineup, and I think it sends the right message. And you're getting them, at a time where they're together, and it really puts us in a position that we can compete year in and year out. We still have to build around them, still have to have all the other elements, but they're an important part of it.
Bruce Bochy and his three rings are likely headed to the Hall of Fame someday. What makes him as good a manager as he is?
I think for Boch, he's always been a big proponent of players knew that he believed in him. I mean, that's really been a strength of his. When we've been at our best, he believes in the guys, and they know it, and that's a difference maker. I mean, when you're on that field, it's a game of failure, and you know that your manager and your coaches are behind you even when things aren't going so good, and that's a game changer. But he's also been very successful at not only managing the team, you know, in the clubhouse and keeping them positive. He also, you know, does a lot of very strategic moves on the field, and that's, you know, with a great bench coach and the coaches around him, there's a lot of support. But at the same time, you have to make, you know, on the spot decisions, and he's been, you know, very successful for that reason.
We see what Hunter Pence does for you guys at the plate and in the field. What does he bring to your clubhouse?
Well, Hunter's as you know, probably the most veteran player on the team in many respects at this point. And He plays a significant role defensively, offensively, but emotionally, and he keeps everybody upbeat. And again, this is a game of failure, and you know, but Hunter will remind you, no matter how many times you fail, that the next opportunity will be the best opportunity. And he doesn't let any of us get down, even those of us in the front office. So he's always a positive light in that room, and will. Also has, you know, just a great perspective on the game itself, and you know, he said it himself, and I think it's something we try to remind all of our minor league players of, is that, you know what, I play every game like it's my last, and that shows on how much effort he puts into it.
And some great postseason press conferences too.
That's right.
You signed Johnny Cueto for $130 million, Jeff Samardzija for $90 million before 2016. You've had a core of homegrown starters that carried you through those title years. How much of a risk is it to give a big free agent starter that kind of money, given how fragile pitchers' arms are?
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of a lot of faith in the evaluations that we have, you know, not only from performance on the field, but ultimately, you know, our medical counsel, advisory as to how we'll, you know, be able to evaluate the health of the player. Some of that's done before you sign them, so a lot of it's done after you sign them. But I think that there's a lot of faith too in the staff downstairs, both medical staff and coaching staff, to help keep guys healthy. And you know, I think the risk, you know, there's been you know, failures for us as well. So, and we're very early in his contract, but we're certainly very thankful to the year he had and how good he looks this spring. And but you know, this is an organization that you know, wants to, you know, compete to win every year, and it's going to take that kind of talent to do it.
Johnny has an opt-out in his deal, I believe, at the end of this season. As opt-outs have become the new trend in big contracts, how do you feel about them?
I mean, when a player's coming to an organization for the first time, in the case of Johnny Cueto, I think it's helpful for him to figure out, is this a fit for him long-term? And sometimes having that out gives him a peace of mind. Yeah, if this doesn't fit right, I can go back out there. So I think in some ways, it's an acknowledgement to him. Yeah, we're a new environment, and we're West Coast, where you're used to being back East. And can this fit for you? And I think that giving him that confidence allows, or that flexibility allows him to make a commitment to us when he did. I mean, he could have waited on the market longer and seen what else was out there. You know, we couldn't stay out in the market forever. At some point, we had to make a decision. So I think that opt-out, in our case, was a good compromise and a way to help him make the decision easier. I mean, every case is different. I mean, I know there's opt-outs for extensions done and guys that have been with you forever in other organizations, and that may be in the right frame of mind. That's not a bad idea, too. But again, I think that you want players who want to be here, and if at some level, if you have that ability to opt out, then in some ways maybe that's best for both parties.
Do you view Bumgarner and Cueto as the best 1-2 punch in baseball?
I'm biased, though, yeah.
How much of a loss was Will Smith?
Well, he was in a position where he could pitch in the 7th and 8th innings for us, and so it was a significant loss. And also his presence and experience is a huge loss. That, you know, so ultimately we have to balance that with other guys in the bullpen, in the camp, to determine who's going to ultimately take those roles.
How do you rate your farm system at the moment?
I mean, I like what we're doing from a pitching and position player standpoint. You know, when you pick a little lower, You just don't get necessarily guys that are talked about as much, and you know, you see the top 100 come out, and I think our guys are underrated and undervalued, and that's okay. You know, we believe in them and believe that there's opportunity coming where they can help us up here, some in the near future and some in the distant future. And I guess in terms of our system, I think we're very strong, and I don't think there's any perfect system out there. But when you look around the diamond at our affiliates, I feel very good about where guys are at.
How do you assess the state of the National League West right now?
It's a very tough division. I mean, with what the Rockies have done, and Arizona already being strong enough to, you know, just get healthy this year, and not to mention LA. I mean, it's gonna be a battle. I mean, there's a lot of ball games in our division, and even the Padres, who are rebuilding, you know, they're not giving games away, so you're gonna have to compete.
your every other year even streak ended last year. You guys ready to start an odd year streak now?
We're good with the odd idea. It's an odd thought, but I'm very much liking it.
Bobby, thanks for your time. Appreciate it. Good luck this season.